All right, here we are. Episode 1. That's where we start this adventure that I'm starting with all of you. All right, so because I have no real knowledge on how long I can make a video on YouTube, I know I can make the podcast episode on the streaming media of Spotify and Apple Music or what else. I know I can do that for long, but for YouTube, I'm still not sure. So I don't know how many albums I'll be talking. Basically, what I forgot to say in my intro video is that I'm gonna try to not go over 5 minutes per record. So right now I have planned to talk about 6 records, but I don't know if that's what's gonna actually end up happening, because while I'm gonna be editing and trying to release the stuff on YouTube, it's gonna tell me, oh, this is too long, and then I'll have to cut it out and change my plans a little bit. But that's okay. So for the first episode and the first record I'm gonna talk, let's start with some hot stuff. And when I say hot, I'm not talking about the quality of music right now. I'm talking about Big Drama. Right now we're gonna start with Linkin Park, From Zero. Alright, so Linkin Park, From Zero, is the 8th release from the band. It has been released in November 15, 2024, and it is only 31 minutes and 54 seconds long, which I always appreciate about this band, is their albums never go for too long, always appreciate that. And it is their first release since One More Light, who came out 7 years ago. And it is also the first record without Chester Bennington, who passed away tragically, and also without their co-founding drummer Rob Burden, replaced by Colin Britton, and now with Emily Armstrong on the lead vocals. So I just talked about Big Drama, so let's start with that. Even though, like I said, this album came out almost a year ago, I basically didn't listen to the singles, because when they announced they were coming back with a new singer and was announced to be Emily Armstrong, that's where everything blew up, even before the singles and the album released. So I did take some time before actually listening to this, because I wanted the drama to boil down so I can have a more a non-biased opinion, let's say. Let the music talk without all the story. So the big controversy is that Emily Armstrong, when she was announced as a lead singer, people immediately brought back the stories that, first of all, she was part of the backlash defending convicted rapist Danny Matterson, and also that apparently she has ties with the Church of Scientology, which I actually don't know if that's true. That's just people have been throwing that around, and she hasn't answered to any of it. But the second one I just said, I kind of pass over, because who knows. The first one, let's say it's pretty bad stuff. When all fans went barbaric over this, basically she had to go on social media and basically say that she hasn't spoken to him since unimaginable details emerged from the court that she didn't know about it, and now she stating that she misjudged him and condoned everything she has done. So that's the big controversy, outside of the fact that there was a lot of fans who just wanted Linkin Park to end with Chester Bennington. So let's be honest, it's the band's freedom and choice to go without him, and they have the right to do so. Now the big question is, was that the right choice? The other band you can compare this is Pantera. Fans are constantly shitting on them for continuing without the Abbott brothers, even though Zakwell and Charlie from Anthrax have great connection with them, and all the reunion is basically all about honoring the legacy and playing music for fans who haven't had the chance to hear them. So like, similar, not totally the same, but fans are not happy because they replace members that have passed away. So now I've talked about this, let's just go to the record itself. It has 11 songs. I'm gonna say It opens with From Zero, which is a 20 second something intro, and it's a big waste of time, to be honest. Like, if you have an intro, it should have some meaning, whatever, but it just feels like nothing happened in it. But then you jump into, I believe, one of the first single, Emptiness Machine. And let me tell you, this song is great in terms of opening the door to what is gonna be the future of Linkin Park. It is a great song. It sounds fresh. Even though it has Linkin Park written all over it, their trademark sound, I would say, it sounds fresh. It sounds new. It's extremely great. It I would say that's a perfect song to say we're back. Now it follows with Cut the Bridge, which is also a very good track. I'm gonna say pretty much the same I could say about Emptiness Machine. It sounds fresh while still sounding like the band. It has some good hooks. Now, for the rest of the record, there's some issues for me that start to rise up. And the way I'm gonna say it is I would divide the songs on this record in three different categories. The first one is the songs that feel, like I said, new and fresh. Like I said, the two first songs who opened the album for me does that, and there's another one I'm gonna talk about later. Then the two other categories, one I'm gonna, it sounds worse than what it actually is, but I call it light self-plagiarism, which songs to me like Heavy is the Crown, Casualty, Two-Faced, I Gave You Everything I Had, those songs sounds like the band is really, really, really trying hard to go back to those first record. And I'm not talking about just feeling like, I'm not just talking about going to that pool of sound and creating new sounds. No, it sounds like they're borderline trying to copy old songs they already did. Self-plagiarism. Which, I'm gonna be honest, I don't think it's that far in that. Like, I think the band who gets the most shit on for doing that stuff is Nickelback, and I don't think it's on that level really, but you do hear it. The first time you hear songs like, to me, Heavy is the Crown and Two-Faced are the worst in this. The third type of songs in this record, I call it the One More Light effect. So another thing that's part of the controversy is that the last record they released before that, One More Light, was so hated by both critic and fans. I remember back in that year, I would listen to, let's say, music video or be on forums looking at what's the worst album of the year, and everybody was putting that record in their top 5 worst record of the year. And to be honest, I didn't feel that strong about it. Like, I think the record was not very good, but it was not as bad as people thought it was. And to be fair, also I have to declare that I have kind of always liked this band while never being, I would call, a fan. And also I always felt like I was a black sheep in terms of how I see their albums. Like, I think their two first records, like everybody says, are really good. But my favorite record is A Thousand Sun, which is a record that not everyone liked back in the days for being very experimental. You know, the song sounded very different. They were experimenting with the new gateway of sounds, and also the album was a concept about things that were different. They were usually always talking about emotions, expressing themselves. This record was more about like a post-war apocalypse, which was very interesting. I really enjoyed that record, A Thousand Sun, but most fans doesn't, so I always felt it hard with the fan base, especially after One More Light is another one where everybody was saying this is the worst thing ever, but I was like, nah, it's kind of just okay. So there is some of that who carries on this record, because for One More Light, what happened behind the scenes is that, well, Chester was already going through a hard time in his life at that moment, so he was not very available for being with the band in the writing session. That is why, if you look it up on One More Light, there's only two songs credited by Chester, which compared to the past, it's very little. So One More Light is pretty much more Mike Shinoda's doing what he wants. And what he wanted to do back then was less rock, more of a pop sound. and that's why I think the biggest issue with that record came from. Now, in this record, once again, Chester is completely gone, and as much as I think Mike and company tried really their best to bring some of that old school sound back, there are still some songs on there that I'm like, this doesn't really sound like Linkin Park, but it's on there. Songs like Over Each Other, Overflow, Stained, especially Overflow, that's probably the worst song on the record. So those songs just feel like, once again, a little bit of that identity of No More Lights that creeps on here. And I would say the album ends on a very strong note with Good Things Go, which I would say is more of the good quality of the first two songs of the record. So now, even though I've talked about basically the sounds like something they've done before, or it sounds like what people hated about the last record, all I have to say is, like, none of them are really bad tracks. Some of them are actually pretty good in doing that. Like, I think songs like I Give You Everything I Have or Over Each Other and Stained, Casualties are strong songs, even though, like I said, it will immediately make you think of other songs in the past. They're pretty good. And the basically what I thought was a little bit after listening to the record, I kind of think, like, they went through all that controversy, all that stuff, and now apparently I think the guitar player doesn't want to tour with the band, and they had problem filling up stadium in their first tour, and I kind of felt like they went through all of that just to release a record that was kind of fine. But at the end of the day, the way I saw it, and when I looked at what the fans feeling, I was like, this is a record for the fans. 100%. This is them trying to say we're gonna keep going with a new lineup, and we really want to honor the sound that we made in the past while moving forward. And the way I'm gonna make a comparison, to me this record feels like Star Wars Force Awakens, which is, Force Awakens was not a bad movie, it wasn't also very great, and I think the main reason is most people liked it when it came out is because it was really, really similar to what happened in the past. And that's okay, you can do something that sounds like something that happens a long time ago. If you do it well, nobody will have a problem with that, and I think this is the case here. I mean, let's be honest, not to move into a movie discussion, but the only thing they need to not do is, when we saw Force Awakens, we went, well, this is good, but I hope the next movie is, they're gonna do something different. So what Linkin Park needs to not do is The Last Jedi, because there's no way in hell anybody wants that thing again. Linkin Park From Zero gets a 6.5 out of 10. Alright, next we're gonna talk about Coheed and Cambria Vaxxix Act... Oh, God damn it. Coheed and Cambria Vaxxix Act 3, The Father of Make-Believe. Life can be so demanding. When anxiety strikes, can't hold all of withstanding. That's one hell of a title. So this came out in March 14, 2025. It is their 11th release. It is a little less than an hour, 57 and 27 seconds. Alright, so to talk about Coheed and Cambria, I mean, probably a lot of people know them for Welcome Home and maybe some other songs, but I have to take a little moment to talk how crazy, unique, and creative this band is. So this band is pretty much what happens when somebody who's a musician, talented musician, likes science and fiction comics way too much, and it decides, well, what if I make a band that releases records like comics? So what I mean by that is, well, Coheed and Cambria, the band name, is the name of the two main characters of the story. Every record happens in the world called the Armory World, and basically the first four records, what most fans would say are the glory years of this band, The first four records are about a story that follows each other and ends on the fourth record. Now, when they did the fifth record, it was a story that was a prequel to those four records. Then they did two records divided that was called The Afterman. That was like a standalone story in the same universe. And then they decided, you know what? Let's take a break from that crazy world and make a normal record talking about normal things in life. And now they are completely back. So they announced years ago that they are going back to the Armory War world. They have a brand new story with brand new characters, and it's gonna be a 5-album story. And they released the first one, Unheavenly Creature. The second one, I don't even remember the name, to be honest. Those names are kind of obnoxious. And now we have this one, Father Will Make Believe. And Cohen and Cabrera, in terms of sound, already is very unique. It's like a mix of older prog rock with like pop punk and alternative rock and some heavy metal in there. It's very, very interesting. And so I've been a fan of this band for a long time, but I have to be honest to when I said about fans saying, well, the first four albums were their glory years, I think every single record they released since then have been very good, but they never been back to that level. So it's always worth going back, and there's gonna be songs you're gonna love to death, but it's never been totally back near that. And I wanted to talk about this record after the Linkin Park record I just talked about, because when you look at this record and you look at the track listing, and the first time you listen to the album, there's a lot of similarities in writing, that is in about the structure of the record, that is very similar with their earlier release. Like, the record starts with Yesterday's Loss, which is start kind of orchestral and goes into almost acoustic lullaby. Once again, very reminiscent of their Good Apollo Part 4 1 record. And it ends with a song that's divided in four parts called The Continuum. And once again, very similar to all of those records in the past. And so, now what? Well, when I first was listening to this record, I was really enjoying it. But the question that was always on my mind is that, am I really enjoying this because of the actual music, or because are they trying to bring me back to that older sound? And it became really clear to me that it was not the case, because their newer releases, let's say the past two records, when they declared the new 5-album story, the sound is very different in terms of how it sounds and how they're going for it. It's a lot more modern. It has a lot of fuzz in the guitars. It has bombastic like riffs, and it's not as, let's say, as heavy and bouncy as it used to be, and a little less proggy, I would say. It's a lot more straightforward and big and everything. So, and the more I listened to this record, the more it was growing on me, the same way the first record did back in the days. And right now, I'm gonna say that, like I said, every release they ever released since those four first records have not been on par. This is the closest they have ever been to release an album this great. And I have, you know, nothing bad to say about this record, really. Like, songs like Searching for Tomorrow, Goodbye Sunshine. Goodbye Sunshine is like one of my happy songs. If I need to start a day with energy and positivity, that's a song that went straight on that playlist. Searching for Tomorrow is great. The Father Make Believe, Blindside Sunny, the four Continuum songs are very interesting. And basically every song on there is a fucking banger. The only song that's kind of on the weak side is Mary of Mercy, which is kind of a sucky ballad. Like, it's one of those songs, when you know everything is great on there, you can just listen to it and get passed through. And it's not really bad or anything, it's just not very interesting. And the rest of the record is like 10 out of 10 songs. I'm gonna say I'm very happy that this record came out. I keep every time I start listening to it, I just want to listen to it again when I'm done with it. So this is probably on the watch for the Muckies Award album of the year already. I know I'm the second album I ever talked about, so but I really have a strong feeling about this one. It never felt like a band is so back as Coheed and Cambria in 2025. So Vexis Act 3 gets 9.5 out of 10. Alright, now we're gonna talk about my favorite genre of music, progressive music. You know, those crazy instrumental with a big concept, that nerdy shit. So we're gonna talk about by far the oldest band in that genre right now. We're still releasing music. Released a new album this year, Jethro Tull, Curious Remnant. So Jethro Tull is a band that's been around since 1967. It has been led with multi-instrumentalist Jan Anderson for the entire time. And Curious Remnant is their 24th release, my god. It has been released on 7th of March 2024. It is a little over 15 minutes. Only has 9 tracks with the before last one, which is over 16 minutes long. It's already looking for a great start. So what's interesting about Jethro Tull is that since the early 2000s, it was kind of seemed like the band was done making music ever again. You know, they released the last album in 1999 and then they had a Christmas album in 2003, and they didn't release anything until Jan Anderson said he came back with, he had some new material, wanted to release it, get a new band to, back together, and released in 2022 the Zealotgene. And then immediately in 2023 released Rock Flute, and now here we are in 2025 with Curious Remnant. And this has been a very good comeback for them. Both of the last record received very good critic, I enjoyed them. And now with Curious Remnant, I'll say the very interesting thing about those three records is they all have a different kind of sound. I mean, Rock Flute was, of course, from the name, very flute heavy records, but this one is way more like folk rocky, very, and also goes back a lot to their darker prog influence. And also they're very interesting is there's a full-time accordion player, which is, you know, no, we don't see a lot of accordion in rock music, so it kind of catch you by surprise when you hear it so much on a record. And to me, right now, I'm gonna say it from the start, this is my favorite out of the last records he has been putting out since the new decade. And it starts very strong with Puppet of the Puppet, Puppet and the Puppet Master. I would say the second track, Curious Remnant, the self-titled song, that's once again on the watch for Song of the Year. It's very proggy. It had the very first riff you hear makes you realize, oh, so that's where Iron Maiden comes from. That's interesting hearing that in 2025. And you have other songs that are extremely like campfire in Ireland near a bar type of songs with the Tipu House or Stygian Hand, songs that make you wanna, you know, dance and fight over whiskey or some shit. And I would say the Drink from the Samwell, the 16 minute song, while being very atmospheric, a lot of flute playing all over it, is very beautiful. It has some great moment and flows very well, and it ends on Interim Sleep, which is just a little poem that he ends read at the end of the record. So I would say, like, I was very surprised with this record, because the last two I was like, well, this is very good, and it's cool to see them still hanging around this late. And but this one, I think, goes very, very strong. If you ever want to go back and playing like RuneScape or some shit, this is a soundtrack to it. It's perfect for that. Curious Remnant gets a 8.4 out of 10. Alright, so the next record we're gonna talk about is Hopef, Last Will and Testament. So this came out in November 22 of 2024. It is slightly over 15 minutes long. It is their 14th released. This album has a lot to go for. I mean, their last record, Incata Venenum, was my favorite album of that year. It was amazing. And this record basically has new stuff. Of course, it's a concept record, like most Opeth album is. This one being kind of interesting, it is about a post-World War One era, including a story of wealthy family or whatever, and it's about, like, every song is part of a testament from their dead parents or whatever, and that's why when you look at the track listing, it's all written a section with that little S symbol that's in the test, literally like the section letter for testament. So basically every song you hear is like written from a last will and testament that's about to go to over their children. I didn't follow too much. Also, after years of Michael Akerfeld bothered Ian Anderson from Jethro to get on the record with him, he finally did. So you have some Ian Anderson playing on this. I think he has some spoken word and he plays some instruments on there. So, and also what I think most fans were really, really, really excited about is that Michael was gonna bring back the death metal growl in here, you know, the thing he has been doing for most of their early career, because Opeth, I think back in the days, were more of a death metal band with some Swedish acoustic instrumentation going for it, and then it became a more of a prog metal band, and then he went straight up for more of a like fusion of rock, prog rock and prog metal, and he kind of gave up doing the death metal growl for a couple records, or at least he was doing it very little, and it made it clear from the first single you heard from this record that he was back at doing it full force. And I'm gonna say, to be honest, that you can tell he hasn't done that in for a very long time. I'm sorry, he is a legend and he has been. His death growl on the first record were great, but now in 2025 it's kind of weak sounding for me. And a lot of the surprising thing for me is most of the material is, to be honest, this is probably the most disappointing record I've heard this year, especially after, like I said, the last record, which was amazing. I feel like for some reason this record has not been clicking a lot for me. I mean, the only song for me that is great on here that might be on the Song of the Year discussion is Section 6, which has a great drum, start with a great drum beat, it builds off of that, and it has some heavy riff while being very groovy, which is always very cool. And the last song, A Story Never Told, is a longer track that is very epic sounding at the end. But this record kind of disappointed me, like all the excitement that was coming from here ended up not mattering a lot in there, sadly. Like the Ian Anderson, I had to listen to the album again to make sure he was in there, outside of the spoken words. And like I said, the death metal growling that people were really excited doesn't bring anything to the table on this record. I would have rather him making more of a focused, more rock, prog rock record that he's been doing recently, because I think even though it divided the fan base and they wish he'd go more to a very heavy material they have been doing in the start of their career, I really have been enjoying the discography as a whole, even though with the changes in the later rounds. So Opeth, Last Will and Testament gets a 5.8 out of 10. Alright, now we're gonna be talking about Dream Theater, Parasomnia. So I've just talked about Opeth being like a pioneer and veteran of the prog metal world. Now Dream Theater, they are the pioneer. If they didn't came out in the 90s mixing metal and prog together, who knows what would happen to the future of this genre. And this album is very exciting. It is their 16th release. It came out in February 7th in 2025. It is 10 minutes over an hour, and it is the return of founding drummer Mike Portnoy. Mike Portnoy basically decided that he was leaving the band to basically be more creative. He has been around so many bands. He replaced in Twisted Sister, Avenged Sevenfold, but he also was in so many bands. We're talking about bands like Sons of Apollo, the Neil Morse Band, Transatlantic, the Winery Dogs, Adrenaline Mob, Flying Colors, so many bands. And now he decided he had enough of this and he wanted to go back to where he started. So even though Mike Mangini was a phenomenal drummer, Mike Portnoy always has brought his writing ability to the table, and that writing ability always has been part of the sound of the early Dream Theater records. So him coming back, my fans really excited. And I have to point out my slight bias here. They're one of my favorite bands ever. And like, no joke, the Scene from a Memory album is probably my favorite record of all time. And I have to be honest also that their latest record that came out before this one was probably my least favorite in their entire discography. So I was at least interested to see where they would go from here. So the album has 8 songs on there, including one interlude. And every songs here are about the theme of the title of the album being parasomnias, which are unusual and undesirable experience and behaviors people experience in their sleep. So every song has a little story and vignettes about that. And so the album starts extremely strong with the intro In the Arms of Morpheus that then drags into Night Terror being the first single. Both of those songs are really strong, and In the Arms of Morpheus is the second song you hear John Petrucci using an 8-string guitar, which was a big deal the last album, even though it ended up being used in the weaker song in the record. I know I catch a lot of 8 saying that I didn't enjoy the song, but here it's on full blast, it's very recognizable, and it literally hits you like a brick wall. And the overall album, especially in those 2 songs, have a bunch of sound effects happening around it to make it very creepy, very unsettling. Now, A Broken Man jumps in and it's another great track. I would say the only thing I found slightly weak on this album is that song chorus doesn't feel very satisfying. Chorus kind of drags the song down a little bit. And then the song goes to Dead Asleep, where it goes in full storytelling mode. The song is, I think, about somebody who goes sleepwalking and killed his wife during sleepwalking because in his dream he was defending his wife from somebody who entered his house. So the 8-string guitar comes here at full blast, the song is great. Then Midnight Messiah is when the song that Mike Portnoy goes back into writing some lyrics. Basically that song, the lyrics, is a bunch of throwback to lyrics from past songs he wrote, and the only thing I could say about this is it's kind of cringeworthy, but the song is very strong. It's very metal full. The song is pretty much full blast metal in there, and it's great. And now we go to the final songs. Like I said, Are We Dreaming is an interlude, and it goes to Bend the Clock, which is the ballad of the record. And let me tell you, I think the entire world of Dream Theater all agreed that this might be one of the best songs they ever written. This song is so beautiful, so strong, has a great chorus, and it's to me one of the best songs of the year by far. And then the record ends on the final and longest song on the record, The Shadow Man Incident, which is epic. It flows very well. It's everything you want about an album closer from this band. So now when I look the album overall, it's extremely strong. But I do think in terms of, let's say, the best record I've heard from this band, it does lack some amazing song. I would say it is like, the album flows very well, the theme works very well, and it all flows together. The entire record unites itself very well, had been one of the heaviest and darkest records they have done in a long time. But outside of Bend the Clock, there's no songs out there that really felt like it blew me away. So when I see people ranking that record in that discography, for me it goes kind of the middle of the discography. It's like I said, I think it's very a consistent record. There's nothing bad, there's only like 10 bits I have to criticize, but there's also lacks Big Guns, which on this record I feel there's only one song that does that. So as a big Dream Theater fan, I would say this album is great, but it does also, because it's one of my favorite band, I do feel like I hold them in higher standard, and they have mostly delivered what I wanted from them. So Parasomnia gets a 9 out of 10. Alright, so now we're gonna be talking about Steven Wilson, The Overview. Shopping bag broke, sending eggs and flour crashing down to the ground, just like star-cluster smashing, but no one will give her a glance. They just shuffle on home in a trance. So The Overview is Steven Wilson's 8th release, even though this guy has been known for being in a lot of bands, the most notable one being Porcupine 3. And the record came out in March 14th, 2025. So I was fooled while listening to this record, because on YouTube Music, it says the record is like an hour and 30 minutes long. And the reason it is because the actual record is 41 minutes long, but it is only two songs. The two songs being Objects Outlive Us, which is 23 minutes long, but divided in 8 parts, and then The Overview, which is 18 minutes divided in 6 parts. Classic prog stuff. But when you go to YouTube Music, and I probably think it's the same for Spotify or Apple Music, it gives you the album twice. The first version, which is the only two songs been very long, and then the album again, but all those small parts all put together. So I was listening to the album twice every time I was listening to it, which is, you know, it didn't took me a while to realize, wait a minute, I heard this twice. Is this the actual, like, concept of the record where it repeats itself? But no, it wasn't that deep. So the actual concept of the record being The Overview effect is a cognitive shift reported by some astronaut while viewing the Earth from space. Researchers have characterized the effect basically like they saw the Earth from far being so small that it kind of gives them a brand new perspective on life and everything. So this is pretty much what the record is about. And the very good thing to hear about the sound of this record is that Steven Wilson kind of went in a different avenue. He went to a more electronic dance track, and despite people finding it kind of good, I don't think that's what people want from him. You know, he's a prog rock guy, even like he's been in so many bands. It also, in the sound production of things, has been very important in remixing some old prog rock classic. So him being basically trying to get our ass on the dance floor was kind of weird. This record not only goes away from that, it goes to his very, very roots of the first Porcupine Tree record, which is being Pink Floyd-esque. I wouldn't say this record is anywhere close to a Dark Side of the Moon or a Wish to We're Here without any stretch of the imagination, but it is such a well-done modern version of that Pink Floyd sound. Very calm, atmospheric, a great instrumentation, and also like it's two songs that are 41 minutes, but it just feels like an entire experience, and nothing feels out of place. It's all very dynamic, it flows extremely well, This is another record that I think is gonna be fighting for album of the year, and it has every right to do so. And it also is very pleasing to see Steven Wilson being so good at something he used to do, made himself known a long time ago from doing that kind of stuff. So the Overview gets a 9.2 out of 10.